Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Welcome back to Dark Florida. I'm your host, Brooke Moreland, and tonight we're venturing into the unknown with a mix of cryptids, UFOs, and mysteries that blur the line between fact and legend. We'll start with a brand new Bigfoot sighting out of Florida and explore the shocking claim of an alleged Bigfoot body discovered in New York. From there, we'll take to the skies and maybe even the seas, as we explore the possibility that UFOs could be coming from our oceans. I'll also share a strange anomaly spotted on Google Maps, a possible UFO off the coast of Antarctica, and my own personal UFO encounter. And finally, we'll unravel the Three-Eye Atlas and the chilling possibility of an alien craft making its way to Earth. But before we get to that, be sure to follow along with everything happening behind the scenes on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast, and be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube at youtube.com/@darkflorida411. And if you have had your own Bigfoot, UFO encounter, or anything paranormal, I'd love to hear from you. You can reach me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida. Or wherever you're listening, leave a 5-star review and share the show with a friend. It really helps. Now, buckle up, because this one's going to be wild. I'm really excited because I've got some amazing events coming up this fall where I will be speaking. On September 20th. I'll be at the Forest Community Center in Ocklawaha, Florida for the Bigfoot Paranormal and Cryptids, a Day of Florida High Strangeness. I'll be sharing stories and talking about strange connections between Bigfoot, cryptids, and the paranormal. This is going to be a really fun and free community event. There will be some light refreshments. So if you're in the area, I would love for you to be able to join us. This event is put on by Bigfoot World Cryptids and the Paranormal Researchers of Central Florida. And we're going to be out there showing our evidence, answering questions, and it's going to be a really good time. Then on October 11th, I'll be in Homeland, Florida at the Moonlight Legends Cryptids Expo. And it's going to be such a fun event. And I'll be diving into some of my own research and adventures in the field. And then on October 18th, I'll be heading to Fort Myers, Florida for Charlie's Beyond Belief Expo, which I am really honored to be a part of. I'm going to be speaking there. I will also have a booth, and this one is going to be all about exploring how these mysteries blend together and why they're so important to keep talking about. So if you're anywhere nearby, I would love to see you, meet you in person, and share in the weirdness together. Now, this week's show, we have got some exciting news to cover, and I thought we might as well start out with a brand new Class A sighting of Bigfoot, or should I say, the skunk ape, here in Florida. This Class A sighting was submitted by the witness on Saturday, July 12th, 2025. And this is BFRO report number 78876. This sighting happened in Levy County, Florida, within the bounds of Gothi State Forest. A couple had a daylight sighting with two Bigfoots crossing the road in the Gothi State Forest, which is 25 miles west of Ocala. The nearest town is in Dunellen, Florida. At 11:15 a.m., my wife and I were traveling on Southeast Levy County Road 337 through the Gothi State Forest near Dunellen, Florida. I observed a bipedal figure exit the forest from the west, take 5 or 6 strides to cross the road into the forest on the east side. As this was happening, I said to my wife, "Look, look, look." And she looked in time to see a second one. I saw both, completing its run across the road. A distance of 50 to 60 feet was covered in 1 second. I kept my eyes on the site of the crossing about 200 feet ahead of us and came to a stop on the east side of the road where we got out and started to look for evidence. No sighting, as there was a small hill on the east side, and only possible evidence was several large impressions in the dry grass about 8 to 10 feet apart. It's noted that there was no road through the woods, but a trace of a game trail and an indication of footprints in the vegetation, again, about 8 to 10 feet apart. The only other witnesses were him and his wife, and the environment was hot, sunny, and clear. Now, this report was investigated by BFRO investigator Dr. Bob, who I actually have had the privilege of getting to meet and go on an expedition with. He is fantastic and is another wealth of knowledge. And I know that he listens to the show. So hello, Bob. Shout out to you. So this is a follow-up from Dr. Bob's report. He says, I spoke with Rick and his wife, Lori, for about 30 minutes by phone as they related their encounter. We had additional email exchanges, and then I was able to visit the sighting area. I found them both to be quite credible and all struck about what they saw. Rick is a retired property appraiser for the Citrus County, where they lived for over 25 years. On this Saturday morning, they were on their way home from a swap meet, taking a road with about 30 miles of nothing as a preferred route. Rick estimated that he saw the first creature at a distance of 500 to 600 feet ahead, and their vehicle was going around 60 miles per hour, which equals 88 feet per second. Even at that distance, they could clearly see an upright bipedal creature with arms and legs moving quickly in a running style. It seemed to Rick that the arms were unusually long. Both creatures looked identical, uniformly dark, potentially black or dark gray in color, but they were too far away to make out the details regarding hair or facial features. He was struck by how fast the creature, quote, glided across the road from right to left and into the tree line. Interestingly, the second creature waited until the first creature had entered the woods on the other side before starting across. By the time she looked up, Lori was able to see creature number 2 before it disappeared. Rick noted that this creature actually leapt into the woods on the left, and Rick endeavored to keep his eyes fixed on the entry point, which estimated now to be 200 feet ahead. But there were no other vehicles in sight when the creatures crossed, perhaps a purposeful timing on their part. But Rick mentioned there is typically steady traffic on that state road. Now, since the event, they made the trip back to the location to better approximate the crossing site and shared below photos, which included an assessed entry point into the woods and also a staged pic with his wife, who's 5'5", down the road, arms extended overhead to 7 feet. He assessed the creature to be about 1.5 feet taller than her reach and much bulkier. Bob was able to travel down the road to the location about 4 weeks after the sighting, and here were some of the things that he noted. First, he noted that the distance between the tree lines on either side of the road is about 80 feet apart. The road itself is around 25 feet wide. Covering that distance in a second or two is a world-class sprinter speed. Point number 2 that he noted, it's that these woods have thinner spots that would allow quick passage. Point number 3, there is a high 5 foot by 10 feet wide elevated berm that is tucked about 20 feet inside the eastern woods parallel to the road, bordering the swampy woods. Rick believes that this berm to be the remains of a railroad track, and there is some gravel on top which supports that theory. Point number four, the forest roads are a mix of gravel and hard-packed clay, which is not an ideal substrate for tracks. He notes is that the Gothi Forest has extensive hiking and horseback trails that could provide opportunities for encounters. There have also been 3 Class A sightings reported nearby, and both Rick and Lori were previously familiar with the Bigfoot subject and would even joke about keeping their eyes open for Bigfoot since they enjoy traveling sparsely populated areas in this region, but both became convinced of their existence after their sighting. Rick feels the creature he saw was similar to the creature caught on the dash cam footage from Finding Bigfoot. If you were to go to the BFRO's website, which is bfro.net, you can pull this report up and see all of the photos for yourself. Attached is a map, as well as some pictures from the road where the sighting occurred. This is a brand new Class A sighting out of the state of Florida. This is a very promising lead, and I'm really excited to be able to get into this area. Some of my other research partners went up there and checked it out, and they said that this area is very, very squatchy. A little fun Florida fact for you is Florida actually ranks number 3 in Bigfoot sightings in the United States. I believe we follow California and Washington for the 3rd most sightings per state. Now, this is not the only Bigfoot news that is in the news lately. You may have seen a headline circulating about a man who claims that he has found, quote, a Bigfoot corpse. Allegedly, a camper believes that he has unlocked the secret behind Bigfoot. His name is Charles Snake Stewart, and he is known as a self-proclaimed Bigfoot hunter, and he has presented his findings in a pretty bizarre way. Snake claims that he discovered the corpse, whom he calls Dak, while he was camping in the lake town of Old Forge, New York, which is about 2 hours west of Albany. Now, he has this giant 8-foot Bigfoot on display at the New York State Fair in Syracuse. He says he discovered this deceased Bigfoot after he was playing audios of Bigfoot howls into the woods and actually received a response back. He claims that he walked towards the noise, and that is when he reports coming across a very foul odor, and he alleges that he came across the body, and he says that is, quote, when he found him dead, end quote. He claims that the body was decomposing. Trigger warning here in case you have a weak stomach like I do. He claims that the body was decomposing and that he had to take out some of the insides to try to salvage it, as he says, quote, taxidermy style. He says that he then took the Bigfoot's body to a garage in Saranac, New York, which is near the Adirondack Mountains, when a friend came over and taxidermied the body. Snake's goal in all of this is to raise enough money to have the body scientifically authenticated as a Neanderthal human hybrid. He claims that Cornell University DNA lab dismissed him, but that he went on to submit the DNA through their veterinarian lab. Now, the results are shocking. He claims that the lab results back is that the DNA is mainly Neanderthal. He's yet to provide proof of any of that to back his story. He claims that he's potentially going to release this information before the fair ends. And I have to be honest, I have seen some photos of this alleged Bigfoot, and I'm not saying that it's not real, but my professional opinion is that it is not. I feel like if he was in the possession of a true Bigfoot or Sasquatch body, that the government and Men in Black would have confiscated it before now and not allowed it to be displayed at the New York State Fair. I personally don't believe that the body is authentic, but I guess time will tell. Maybe he will provide proof from some of his lab works at Cornell University, but right now I'm still kind of on the fence with this. I'd love to know what you guys think. I'm just not sold on it yet that he is in the possession of a taxidermy Bigfoot. I just don't think so. To me, this looks like some kind of costume. And honestly, like I said, if he was in the possession of a real body, I think that the police would have stepped in. because at the end of the day, I am still skeptical about this. Now, moving right along into some more strange news that is making headlines. It wasn't that long ago that we were talking about Antarctica and the strange sounds that were coming from below the ice that scientists had no idea where it was coming from. Well, here is another mind-blowing piece of Antarctica UFO news that we need to talk about. So let's get right into this. So some people using Google Maps are freaked out after discovering what looks like a UFO that's on a cliff about 90 miles from Antarctica's coast. Now, the origin of this is not known, and people are questioning, is this something that's man-made? Is this something alien? We don't know. When you look at the image on Google Maps, what you'll see is this dark round semicircle that kind of is tucked up under a cliff or kind of into the dirt. It could be deliberately half hidden to try to make it difficult to spot. Other people say that it is definitely one of those sleek disc UFOs. Now, if you want to take a look at this very unusual finding, you can do so yourself by just going onto Google Maps and in the search bar, type in these coordinates: 66 degrees by 16 by 24.5 south, 100 degrees 59.03.5 east. Some interesting things to note about the location that it was found is that it's about 45 miles away from Mill Island, and it sits on this ice island that's approximately 30 miles long and 18 miles wide, which is pretty close to the Antarctic coast. And it's also 6 miles away from an active Polish research base. And again, some things that seem pretty interesting about the object is that it does have what appears to be a silver line that goes all the way around the rim. And it really does look like that classic UFO that you have seen in the movies or perhaps even in the sky. Other than that, it is black in color and it sticks out from all of the rock and the snow that's around it. Nick Pope is a UFO expert who was with UK's Ministry of Defense. He called the finding intriguing and, quote, pretty spooky and an object that makes one wonder. I would say it definitely makes you wonder indeed. It's certainly not natural, and it does appear to have either a man-made or alien-made quality to it. I mean, looking at the pictures, when you zoom in, it does get a little pixelated and makes it hard to tell, but you can clearly see that something is hiding under this cliff in Antarctica. We can only speculate on what it is that's hiding under there. But as we've talked about before, Antarctica is a very strange place with a lot of things going on, and I don't think that we really know the full truth about what is going on there. Did they discover something under the ice? And with the ice melting, are some of these secrets that they have tried so hard to hide going to come out? But that isn't the only UFO news on the timeline this week. There's actually a bit more, quite a bit more. Navy officers have said that underwater UFOs are legitimate threats and the evidence is hard to ignore. I believe it's worth noting that a lot of these UFO sightings do happen near or around water, and a lot of times even often over water. I may have touched about it on the show before, but I don't think I've ever really dove deep into it. But I actually had a UFO encounter over the water back in 2014, which makes this next story I'm going to share all the more interesting. Back in November of 2014, I was with some friends and we decided that we were going to go down to the beach and hang out as one does in November in South Carolina. So we were making our way down to the beach that night and we were just going to hang out, enjoy the evening. It was one of those beach towns that kind of closes up when it's not in season. So essentially it was kind of a ghost town and nobody was out that night, pretty much but us. And it was very cold out and we had just made our way down to the beach when all of a sudden we're looking out over the water and we observe these lights. Now, these lights were over top of the water. They were much larger than any of the stars and they were this amber orange color. We are observing these giant amber orange balls of light in the sky, and they're making these intelligent formations. At first, they were in a straight line, and then they would go out one by one, and they would reappear in a triangle. And they were making these different shapes in the sky, and it seemed like there was some kind of intelligence behind it. And I have never seen anything like that before or since. When the lights were out, we were hearing this almost like, remember when you used to go back in the movies and the IMAX thing would come on and it would go wah. It was very similar to that, but there was this metallic sound. I couldn't see a ship or anything of that nature. And I know it's hard to believe a world before drones. This was way before we had any of the drone light shows like we do today. They were much bigger than the stars. We were hearing this metallic sound. And honestly, we were pretty scared and taken aback by what we saw, that we got the heck out of there. And it was something that I think really left an impression on us, were these really strange lights that we had observed in the sky. It wasn't until years later, I was watching a program that you guys might be familiar with, Unsolved Mysteries, and I had seen an episode come on about the Phoenix Lights. I was watching this episode and I saw the Phoenix Lights. My jaw just dropped. I got a full body chill because those literally, if I had to describe anything, that the lights that I saw were almost exactly the same as the Phoenix Lights. And now the Phoenix Lights happened back in the 90s. And what I saw was in 2014. I'm like, what is the connection here? Because it was over top of the Atlantic Ocean. That brings us into our next segue about these UFOs over the water. So back to this headline in the article here. It says that in mid-2014, during some training flights off of the coast of Virginia Beach, that an FAA pilot, U.S. Navy Lieutenant Ryan Graves, began to notice something strange. He said that the radar returns looked off and that he was getting these phantom blips of a moving object with unfathomable speed and precision. At first, he just kind of dismissed it, thought it was a glitch, but the anomalies returned, and they were also recorded by these fighter jets' sensors. The object would hover in place, and then it would dart away at supersonic speeds. They were recorded moving from the ocean surface up to 40,000 feet. He notes that sometimes they were stationary, and other times they were 250 to 300 knots, and sometimes they would go supersonic to 1.1 to 1.2 Mach. At all altitudes and moving all over the ocean. He says that after appearing only as glitches on his jet's radar, that one of the objects finally came into view. Graves reports seeing a dark gray or black cube inside a clear sphere between 5 and 15 feet in diameter, coming within just 50 feet of his jet. And he says that was the turning point where they say that they really started treating this as a safety issue. And that over the next year, the Graves Squadron recorded sightings of unidentified objects almost on the daily. And sometimes the objects flew in a loose formations, and other times they traveled completely alone. They had no exhaust, no visible propulsion, and no wings. Sometimes the objects would just stay and rotate in place, and others vanished once they were approached. Now keep in mind, this was happening off of the coast of Virginia Beach over the Atlantic. But it turns out that pilots that were stationed off the West Coast on missions on some of our other carriers had been experiencing the same phenomena for years. He noted that these objects appeared to be capable of medium travel, meaning that they were able to move from air to sea without slowing down, splashing, or emitting any heat. This challenged everything they thought they knew. Graves still doesn't claim to know what the objects were, but he says that one thing is clear, that this was not business as usual and that there's a serious issue at play. It wasn't just one rogue object, one random UFO or UAP. He said that this was a serious issue at play because it wasn't just one rogue object and it wasn't just happening to them on the East Coast. It wasn't just his squadron, but it was a pattern and it was something happening globally. because of this experience, Graves is now one of the most vocal voices in the UAP community, and he is requesting transparency. Now that he has retired from the military, he's the founder of Americans for Safe Aerospace, and it's the largest UAP-focused pilot safety initiative in the world. He works with former Pentagon and naval officers to push for greater transparency. He's not claiming that these craft are alien, but he does know for certain that they are not using any known human technology. Some of his theories as to an explanation for what he saw are extraterrestrial visitors, time travelers, perhaps even breakaway civilizations. He doesn't know, and he understands that this challenges the status quo, but he really is pushing for transparency. To further add more evidence to Graves' claims, a former Admiral Tim Gulladult, he's an oceanographer, he was one of the very first people to view the footage from some UAP incidents that happened in 2015 that involved fighter jets that were attached to the USS Theodore Roosevelt. At the time, this ship was conducting some training exercises off of the coast of Florida. They show strange craft flying at incredible speeds with no visible means of propulsion, and sometimes they even rotated in midair. He says, quote, "I knew then that what I saw was not our technology, and we don't even test experimental aircraft in training ranges because it's too dangerous," and that, quote, "he had access to everything classified and that no nation has craft that can move like that," end quote. He is now retired from the Navy and is currently the CEO of Ocean STL Consulting, and he's really pushing for the U.S. government to treat this phenomena as a research priority. We're already seeing some of that policy being put into place because in 2023, Congress passed the UAP Disclosure Act, which is a legislation that required federal agencies to collect, catalog, and disclose records related to recovered non-human craft and biologics. And this was really the first time that the U.S. law openly acknowledged the potential existence of an off-world or non-human intelligence, and even hinted at the craft retrieval and reverse engineering programs that so many of us speculated have existed for decades. The Admiral goes on to speculate that potentially these crafts could be from another galaxy, but that the possibility that they exist underwater is very real, and that maybe they've lived here for a long time before we even evolved. But one of his hypotheses is that they have created a habitat and a place to live beneath the seafloor. You might recall that on episode 17, Aliens, Psychic Abilities, Bigfoot, and Interdimensional Beings, a lifelong experiencer speaks out with Phyllis Cesar, that she touches on the fact that there is an alien base in the Gulf of America. She has said that she has gotten confirmation from some alien civilizations that there is, in fact, an underwater base lurking out in the Gulf. And it's been long speculated that perhaps they're not coming from outer space, but that they're already here within our world and actually are surviving underneath of the water. And that is truly one of my favorite UFO theories, is that perhaps they aren't from space, but they're actually from our own world. And that just opens up a whole, pun intended, sea of possibilities. I think that it's interesting that we know more about space, allegedly, than we do what's happening in our own oceans. And they're making new discoveries in our oceans every single day. And I guess while we're on the topic of space, it brings us to our next piece of news that is pretty breaking. And we're finding out more about this every day. 3-Eye Atlas, which, if you're not familiar, let me give you a little bit of background. It was discovered on July 1st, 2025 by the Asteroid Terrestrial Impact Last Alert System, aka ATLAS, which is located in Chile. It is the third confirmed interstellar object to pass through our solar system, following Oumuamua in 2017, and Borisov in 2019. iAtlas is an interstellar comet with a hyperbolic trajectory, meaning it originates from outside of our solar system and it will not remain bound to the sun. It was spotted at about 4.5 astronomical units from the sun, which is about 670 million kilometers, and it is moving at a high rate of speed, approximately 130,000 miles per hour. Now, it will reach its closest point to the sun on October 30th of 2025 at about 1.4 AU, which is just inside Mars's orbit. And its closest approach to Earth is going to be on December 17th at 2025 at 1.8 AU, which for now poses no threat. Some observations include those from the Hubble Space Telescope on July 1st, which shows it has a small nucleus with a weak cometary activity, but with no typical spectral signatures of cometary gases, which is unusual. Harvard astrophysicist Avi Loeb has proposed that this is more than just a natural comet. He is suggesting that this is potentially an extraterrestrial technological object, which I know, what does that mean? He acknowledges that yes, it's most likely a comet, but here's where his arguments stem from some of these observed anomalies. One of the first things that kind of sets this 3I Atlas apart is the size anomaly. Initial brightness suggested that the diameter of around 20 kilometers, which Loeb argues is implausible for an interstellar asteroid, as these sort of objects this large are extremely rare. And he calculated that we should have detected a million smaller objects like Oumuamua, which was only 100 to 200 meters, before seeing one this size based on the expected density of this interstellar material. So basically, if it's a comet, the nucleus is likely smaller, but the lack of cometary gas emissions just adds to the puzzle. So in layman's terms, what he's saying is basically something this large should have been spotted way sooner. And 20 kilometers is approximately 12 miles. So we're saying that this thing is a 12 mile diameter, which is huge. And he's suggesting that we should have seen this long before it was spotted on these telescopes. Something else to add to the weirdness of the 3I Atlas is the trajectory that it's taking. This object's orbital plane is aligned within 5 degrees of the solar system's plane. This object is going to be approaching Venus, Mars, and Jupiter, which Avi Loeb suggests could indicate an intentional trajectory if it were technological. They also note that it's going to be passing by the Earth, the moon, and the sun, and almost like it's on some sort of reconnaissance mission. I mean, the odds of this thing being on that path is about a billion to none. So this just adds to the strangeness behind this 3I Atlas and why he kind of suggests that this might be more of an intentional course and not so much a random interstellar space object. And something else that sets it apart, just another anomaly to add to the mix, is that it is unlike typical comets. So the 3I Atlas lacks that spectral signature of gases like carbon-based molecules and its dust emissions that appear ahead of the object as it's coming towards the sun rather than behind it, which Avi Loeb finds that very suspicious, and he suggests that that sort of glow could indicate a nuclear-powered source if it is, in fact, artificial. Now comes to play the dark forest hypothesis. In a paper with collaborators Adam Hibbard and Adam Crowell, Avi Loeb explores the idea that the 3I Atlas could support the dark forest hypothesis, which suggests that extraterrestrial civilizations remain silent to avoid detection by hostile entities, and its trajectory and timing being eclipsed by the sun right at the right time could allow for such a clandestine maneuver. Avi Loeb ranks the Three-Eye Atlas as a 4 to 6 on his proposed Loeb scale, which 0 stands for definitely natural and 10 stands for definitely technological. To him, it indicates a moderate chance of being artificial, though he still emphasizes the need for more data, and he advocates for open-minded observation, and he criticizes the dogmatic dismissal of the alien hypothesis and has proposed redirecting NASA's Juno spacecraft to intercept it near Jupiter in March of 2026. To just kind of touch on other interstellar space objects and the rarity of it, these interstellar objects like Three-Eye Atlas are exceptionally rare due to the vast distances between the stars and the low probability of objects being ejected from their home systems and passing through ours. Only 3 have been confirmed in the past decade. The first one, as we mentioned before, Oumuamua, is a small, elongated object with no cometary activity, but an anomalous non-gravitational acceleration, leading Loeb to hypothesize that that also could have been an alien probe. That brings us to Borisov, which in 2019, it appeared to be a clear comet with a visible tail behaving in the way that we would expect a natural interstellar object to behave. Now, we have the Three-Eye Atlas, and its size and lack of cometary features make it an outlier, though most astronomers lead towards a natural explanation. However, with an object as large as the Three-Eye Atlas, which let's not forget it is 20 kilometers, aka 12 miles long, is extraordinary, and it implies that the interstellar mass density is far higher than they expected, which challenges the current model of ejected materials from other star systems. The Three-Eye Atlas follows a hyperbolic trajectory, entering our solar system, passing close to Mars, Venus, and Jupiter, and exiting by early 2026. It aligns with the ecliptic plane. The low tilt of its orbit, which is relative to the solar system's planetary plane, is statistically unlikely, a 0.2% chance, suggesting that this is either a rare coincidence or, in Avi Loeb's view, potentially engineered trajectory. As we noted, it has close planetary approaches. Its proximity to Venus, Mars, and Jupiter, with minimal distances enabling potential deployment of objects per Lobe, could be strategic if it is artificial, though natural objects can also have such paths. On October 30th of 2025, the Three-Eye Atlas will be on the far side of the sun, which makes it unobservable from Earth. And Avi Loeb speculates that this would allow covert maneuvers if in fact it were an alien probe. Another thing that makes its interception difficult is its velocity. It is going at 58 kilometers per second, just adding to the challenge of studying it closely. What really makes the Three-Eye Atlas stand out is the significance of its path and its rarity and the opportunities it provides for observation. It offers us a chance to study a material from another star system and potentially reveal insights into the composition of distant planetary systems. If it is artificial, as Avi Loeb hypothesizes, it could imply surveillance or an interaction by an advanced civilization, though a lot of other scientists say that this is unlikely. For myself, I'm not sure what to make of it. I have read a lot on Three-Eye Atlas, and it is certainly strange. This is definitely something I'm going to be watching very closely and keeping an eye to the sky because I don't know what to make of it. I think the entire situation is very interesting, but with anything of this magnitude, it reminds me of Ronald Reagan's 1987 UN speech where he talks about an alien threat. And in that speech, he talks about how the concept of an alien threat could unite humanity. So what I can say is use your discernment and don't get swept up in all of the hype that the aliens are going to come to our planet to destroy it, or that there's some imminent alien threat mothership heading towards Earth. What I can say is be curious, use your discernment, and stay informed. If anything, I think that this is an incredible interstellar object that is passing through our solar system. I think it is completely wacky that the trajectory it's on is literally 1,001,200% of happening, but don't be afraid. We will be keeping a close eye on this, and I will definitely be touching on it as we get closer to October 30th as it goes through our solar system. That brings me to our last story of the day, which is the Bermuda Triangle, which is back in the news. It's been a little quiet, and I think that there's kind of a joke in the conspiracy and paranormal community that the Bermuda Triangle has kind of faded into the background. You don't hear many people talking about it. Don't worry. Scientists claim that the Bermuda Triangle mystery could all be explained through a natural phenomena. At least one scientist claims. Dr. Simon Boxall is an oceanographer from the University of Southampton. As we know, the Bermuda Triangle has been a mystery for more than 500 years, and it's been the site of many shipwrecks, plane crashes, and paranormal events. Dr. Boxall explains that this can all come down to, quote, massive man-eating rogue waves. He claims that these waves are around 100 feet high and that they form from the conjoining of storms in the region and have swallowed up ships, and that they could potentially break them clean in half and wipe away the evidence just by the sheer force. He says that storm systems coming from the north and the south come together, and that additional ones that could be coming off the coast of Florida could potentially lead to a deadly formation of rogue waves. He claims that something like a supertanker or a big cargo vessel could be destroyed by one of these rogue waves systems. He says, quote, if you can imagine a rogue wave with peaks at either end and there's nothing below the boat, so it snaps in two, if it happens, it can sink within 2 to 3 minutes, end quote. He also says that the steep walls of the rogue waves buoy the ship on the port and stern side so severely that the ship's bottom is suspended in the air, and that the force of that pressure on the ship could cause a collapse and the rapid submersion of the vessel. He also argued that these rogue waves can account for about 20 planes which have disappeared while flying through the triangle. Now, I guess you guys can all go to bed knowing that there's nothing supernatural happening down in the area between Bermuda, Puerto Rico, and Miami. This area has a history of supernatural happenings. Ever since Christopher Columbus crossed in 1492, he noted in his journal that he and his crew observed some strange dancing lights on the horizon and reported their compass going crazy when going through the area. So many people have perished in that area, and we have pilots who claim that they have flown through wormholes and passed through some mysterious airspace while traveling from the Bahamas to Florida. So you'll have to let me know. Did we solve the mystery? Is it the giant rogue waves? Is it a big nothing burger? I don't know. Obviously, this is dark Florida, and I'm more inclined to think that there is more of a supernatural element to what's happening. I think that the rogue waves can definitely explain some of the activity that's happened there and definitely makes a lot of sense. But some of the stories that you hear come out of the area, like we talked about today with the water UFOs and other things, I don't think it quite explains everything to the mystery of the Bermuda Triangle. But thank you so much again for listening. This concludes another episode of Dark Florida. Until next time. Thanks for joining me on this journey through the strange and the unexplained. If you've had your own encounter with Bigfoot, UFOs, or anything paranormal, I'd love to hear from you. You can reach me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to follow along on Instagram @darkfloridapodcast and subscribe to the YouTube channel at youtube.com/@darkflorida411. And if you want to support the show, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida. Until next time, keep your eyes on the skies and stay curious and stay strange.